long before COVID-19 arrived in New York, the state's long-term care workforce was in crisis, but the pandemic brought the challenges facing the industry to the forefront and exacerbated them in some cases. In an effort to identify solutions that will create a robust workforce to look after aging New Yorkers and New Yorkers with disabilities, the state Senate held a hearing in late July where they heard from all the long-term care stakeholders. For what lawmakers heard and where they go from here, we're joined once again by Senate Aging Committee Chair Rachel May, a Syracuse area Democrat who ran the chamber's inquiry. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be here.
So did stakeholders have any, I guess, unique solutions to the workforce crisis in the industry, whether in institutional settings or in home care, or is the answer once again simply an issue of money?
The primary answer is money. We have to pay them more. But we did hear a lot of really useful things about where the inefficiencies are in the system, how we might be able to address some of those, and at least tweak around the edges so we have more people actually doing work who want to do the work. We heard from people who work in home care, but then if the person they're caring for dies or goes into the hospital, then they're just out of a job until they get another assignment, and that may take weeks, which is ridiculous, both from the standpoint of the worker who wants to be paid and from the system where we need more people doing this work. So I think if we can figure out some of these inefficiencies, that'll help.
So in addressing inefficiencies, does that mean adopting more potential regulations at the state level, or does that mean curtailing existing regulations?
I don't even think that's about regulations. I think it's about developing collaboration so that all the different agencies are talking to each other. I haven't really thought that one through, and it's not going to solve the problem. Like I said before, we've really got to pay people a living wage and make sure we're not disrespecting them through wage theft or through these kinds of disruptions in their work schedules so that they can't make a living.
Well, if the answer is money, the obvious follow-up is, where does it come from? I mean, are we talking about D.C., the state coffers, insurance providers, the people receiving care, some combination of all of the above?
Well, temporarily, there is some money from the federal government, and I and my colleagues have been advocating that the Department of Health spend that on raising wages for home care workers. But in the longer term, we have to pony up the money as a state. We have been cutting allocations for Medicaid year after year. We have a cap on Medicaid that has not recognized the growth in the number of people who need this kind of care. And as a result, home care workers right now upstate, if they're making minimum wage, they're making less than someone who works at a fast food restaurant. That is just totally unsustainable.
During the hearing, the Healthcare Association of New York shared that staff turnover in nursing homes totaled about 94% in 2017 and 2018. They later added some caveats to the figure, but you seemed really struck by that general number they tossed out.
Well, aren't you? It's a shocking number, 94%. That means almost nobody is staying on year after year. That's terrible for the people receiving the care because they need continuity. It's terrible for the businesses that are having to onboard people constantly. And it just is a signal that the whole system is broken. For the not-for-profit nursing homes, the number was much lower, I should point out. Mm-hmm. So it also is a signal that maybe they could be treating their workers better.
Yeah, are you surprised that they just sort of threw that number out as a matter of fact? It wasn't like we had this one-time anomaly. It was, this is how the business works, and we've built our model around it for the most part.
It was surprising to me. I mean, I think the message they were trying to get was, we need higher Medicaid reimbursement rates in order to be able to pay people. And that was certainly, that message was heard. We've been hearing that for years, but I don't think they realized quite how damning that statistic is of their business model.
If you want to make significant changes to the workforce in the long-term care sector, Is this a case where we can turn things around overnight, or are we dealing with like a battleship here where it's going to take some time to see significant changes?
So the research shows if we can raise the wages to a living wage, and my bill, the Fair Pay for Home Care bill, pegs that at up 1.5 times the minimum wage. If we can pay home care workers that much, the research indicates that tens of thousands of people will come in to do the work. But we also need a cultural shift. We heard from some people talking about the whole idea, the stigma around elder care, how difficult it is to get people to go into geriatrics, for example, if they're studying medicine. And some of that is because we don't pay people enough who do those specializations, but also it's because we don't value this kind of work as a society. And that's a big reason why we are not seeing better wages. And so it's both. We have to really change the culture.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking with Senate Aging Committee Chair Rachel May, a Syracuse area Democrat who held a hearing in July to consider workforce issues in the long-term care industry. So to follow up on the potential changes in culture and pay that you want to see, are these types of changes ones that would have an immediate effect on the industry, or would it be delayed potentially years down the road?
Well, if we can raise the wages, we can have people step forward right away, but it takes a lot of political will to say we're going to put $4 billion in the budget for this. One of the pieces of information that is important to keep bringing out, and it came out in the hearing, is that this is an investment. If we invest that kind of money, we get more than that back. The right. state gets a lot back because people aren't going into nursing homes. People are paying taxes. The workers aren't on public assistance, and they are paying taxes, but there also are benefits that accrue to the local communities because people are spending money in their communities, they're staying in their homes and paying their property taxes, all of those kinds of things as well. And one thing that came out that hasn't been calculated in is how much money right now we lose to family caregivers who are pulling themselves out of the workforce in order to care for a loved one because they can't get home care. So if we can support them as well, then they can participate more in the economy. And then, you know, that's yet another multiplier of the investment.
One of the complaints we heard from the nursing home industry at your hearing is that they spend too much time complying with data requirements. Do you think that is a credible concern that they're raising?
No, I think they're absolutely right. And we've been hearing this for a while. And I know some of my colleagues and I met with people from that industry, and we were saying, what will it take to get better options for visitation so families can come in and visit their loved ones? And they said, well, a lot of it has to do with staff time. So if we can save the staff time on busy work, like filling out these forms every single day for something that isn't really changing on a day-to-day basis, we can free up some of that time so they can do the actual care of their residents that the residents need. So I do think that's something we'll be pushing the DOH about.
One of the challenges that this workforce, as well as really anybody in the workforce these days, has is access to childcare. And I was kind of struck by some of the testimony from Stephen Hands, who represents some of these nursing home facilities, where he talked about the access to childcare and talked about it like it being a problem that only existed in the pandemic. And I wonder whether you think there is a disconnect there in terms of what these employers think is going on with parents who are in the workforce, or whether you think I'm reading too much into his comment about the pandemic experience.
I didn't hear that, but I can go back through the transcript to see. I believe it. I mean, I think people have been discounting that issue for a very, very long time. I do think one of the things we're seeing right now, as employers are having a hard time getting employees in every sector across the workforce, is has to do with childcare, and so it's finally an issue that employers are recognizing is critical to enabling their workforce to come back. So I was very appreciative of Senator Benjamin, who has to deal with childcare himself, that he brought this up and said, what about offering childcare as a benefit for your workers, childcare on site, because that's something these caregiving institutions should be good at. They should be able to pull that off. So I thought that was a great point that he made.
And finally, one of the issues you've really been focused on during the pandemic as aging committee chair is access for loved ones and family members of some of these residents to actually get into these facilities and see them. And I noticed you did ask some questions about visitations at nursing home facilities. Did you learn anything new about what might be holding up access to these facilities, even though our state's official pandemic disaster declaration concluded at the end of June?
I didn't learn anything new in the hearings, but certainly by talking some of the one-on-one conversations I've had with the providers, it is this issue they have. Not only are they short-staffed, but they have requirements, for example, for infection control. So every time a visitor comes in, they have to send somebody in after that person leaves and disinfect the whole space that they occupied. And honestly, from what we know now about how the virus is transmitted through the air, some of that may not be necessary. And that may be just a really additional burden that's being placed on them that isn't actually keeping people safe. And I think we should investigate that and find out, is that something where maybe they don't have to dedicate so much staff time to that if it's not having the effect that it's supposed to have?
Well, we've been speaking with Senate Aging Committee Chair Rachel May. Senator, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.